from 88.1 before we launch into the Church of the Subgenius for another Wednesday evening. Let me just run through very quickly and welcome back J.R. Bob Dobbin, the Church of the Subgenius. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mike.
How are you feeling today? Are you feeling...
Fantastic. Yeah, got the slack. It's just rolling in because yesterday was the 22nd, and it's always a heavy number every day.
Of course. I overlooked it totally, the 22nd. Perhaps you could reiterate for our listening audience the relevance of the date. You know, the number.
Oh, no. It's too big of a topic.
Okay.
Go do that later. You're just scraping the barrel for questions. Why use your journalistic intriguing ability?
Let me throw out a question for you, and you... In your own special way, you don't have to answer it. You can tackle the topic any way you'd like.
Yeah.
That is the idea that I know it's been tossed about by Mae Brussel and by a number of other conspiracy theorists, and that is that AIDS could be the result of accidental or purposeful biological intervention by the U.S. government against third world nations. Any ideas on that? In relation to the philosophy of the Church or yourself?
I don't think I could answer that until I got inside the Secret Council of Ten, because that is the question. And I don't know if I'm that protected to give the real answer right now.
Being inside the Council would give you that protection.
Oh, yes. If I get in there, then I can answer that question.
It sounds like a deodorant commercial. protection. What do you mean by protection? Maybe you could elaborate on that.
Well, as I said a few weeks ago, we're going around the final turn. So anything can happen, even though that which must come to pass will come to pass, and my success is guaranteed. We don't know when that success is guaranteed to arrive, to surface, to manifest. So I have to always be on my guard into that point, because that is the key to slack, is comprehensive awareness, using all my faculties, includes paranoia as well as feeling good, okay?
Paranoia is, after all, awareness.
Yes, one of the qualities and aspects of awareness. So if I tackle, specialize in a certain emotion or a certain attitude, then I can reap the services of that. So for me to answer that question, I ought to tell you, no, let's say, for me to answer that question now, and the fact that it's such an important question, and the fact I can't answer it should tell you something about the answer. But I can't lay it out right now, because... I don't think I'd want to push Yahweh for Yahweh one, because he's still in control, though I'm working for him and he works for me. The edge is near.
For your own safety, then I won't pursue that question.
Yes, I think we'll have to hold on and just hope that the people get me into the Secret Council of Ten when I release that, and they can call in and vote for the answer to that question. Actually, it could be a good campaign slogan, eh? Let Bob tell us the truth about AIDS.
One of many possible campaign slogans. I'm particularly excited about today's tape, and I think maybe right into it, unless you wanted to talk now or talk after the tape.
Well, what's the time?
The time is 5:34, our time, of course.
5:34, well, we got a few more minutes.
To wrap?
I'd like to... titillate the nerves there, the electric nerves are responding right now, and tell them that I'd like to go into a little talk at the end of 20 or 22 minutes. I'm going to explain. These are things I can talk about. I'm going to explain the magic and mystique of the three, I won't say the three, but three major personality artists, individuals, private citadels of consciousness of our time. I'd like to have a chance to talk about that and how they approach Salak. I'm going to say each person's name. I want you to give me a short, you know, Rorschach ink blot impression, or even a normal linear impression of the person, and we'll register that as a prelude to my talk later.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah, now? I want you to respond to the three names, okay? Just
I'm
a
ready.
Quick impression, all right. First person I'm going to explain.
Do I just throw out one word or
that, or if you have some other more concrete way of saying it? Was it 5:36 now?
5:35.
Okay, we got a minute. All right, here we go. The first person I'm going to talk about is Captain Beefheart.
I do.
Okay.
I'm thinking of a word. I think of words like quirky, innovative, jazz.
Good, good.
Chat. Okay.
That's good. Okay. The second person, I assume you know who he is. A very important cultural figure. Firefly is the hint. Did you see that movie or hear?
I've seen the promos for it.
Yeah, okay, so you have an idea. The second person I'm going to discuss is Charles Bukowski.
Okay, booze, down and out, poetry, on the road, you know, old Underwood typewriter.
Underwood, you mean?
Underwood. Underwood.
The typewriter?
The old typewriter,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's Underwood, yeah, the old, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Good. All right, that's good. So you've given me a clue, since you're manifesting the audience and sensibilities, gives me a clue to how to focus on this when the challenge comes to me.
Hit me with number three.
Number three is Lyndon LaRouche.
Okay. Well, this is a man who I have, don't have very much respect for. I would say, how about racist?
Okay, we'll leave it at that. So we're talking Defarp, Bukowski, LaRouche in 20 or so minutes.
You've got me excited, Mr. J.R. Bob Dobbs. Let's now move to our propaganda for the evening.
Yeah, this is about the beast in our art, rock and roll. And I think Stang and Drummond are going to get into some very heavy documentation of that phenomenon on this tape. Of course, it won't be accurate 100%, but I knew these things last week, but what intrigues you about this one?
I don't know. I just find the clarity of the speakers. You can actually hear what the people of the Subgenius are saying, which is, I think, a first. You know, it's not as muddled as it has been in the past.
Except for in the Subgenius movement one where it's very clear their testimonials. Like last week was really good, Buck Naked and the other guy.
At the end of the last week.
Right, this sounds like a secret top classified meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Talking
is that
real.
Like something that wasn't supposed to be leaked?
I think so, yeah. Church dogma. I mean, they're explaining the hidden ground to their purpose.
Well, let's, you promised listeners and myself, yes, would talk about three very important people.
Exegesis.
Yes. Well, I'm giving you a little extra time today to diatribe.
Okay. What is the time?
I've got 7 minutes.
Okay.
We were welcome to go over, if you like.
All right, because you were nailed anyways. It's backed up to time.
Well, yeah, the whole thing has been backed up. But, I mean, it is just entertainment listing. After all.
If this is entertainment, then we don't need
this is reality, folks. Okay.
Okay. Three people. Captain Beefheart, Charles Bukowski, and Lyndon LaRouche. Causing confusion in various kinds of publics, and also evoking worship in various kinds of publics. Now, for the last 12 shows, I've laid out the basic principles for slack cultural criticism, leading to process pattern recognition. The main principle was to understand that the electric environment was an extension of the tactile sense. That sense in mankind that interplays all the other senses, which is consciousness itself. Tactility is very close to consciousness itself in the sense that consciousness is an interplay of sight, sound, smell, the five senses plus the other senses, which my church members are well aware of. Now, let's take Beefheart first. Beefheart makes statements that he doesn't like music. Yet he ran quite a successful career in the musical environment of R&R, rock and roll, and even other categories were interested in him, like Ornette Coleman. Is silence tactile? Is that what Beefheart's talking about when he says he doesn't like music? No. He's talking, now that he has a successful career in painting in the 80s, he's sponsored by Julian Schnabel and manages to sell at least $250,000 worth of paintings whenever he has a showing over the last few years in one night. He's obviously working in different media. Now, the style of Beefheart in his writing and his music is sculptural. If Beefheart is a specialist in any form, he's a sculptor. And he applies a sculptural approach to music and to painting. Now, sculpture is the closest art to tactility, next to language. So it's interesting that Beefheart can knock painting and music because he's really referring in an unspoken way to his sculptural role. Now, I don't think he's aware of the causes of his preference and predilection and advantage he has over other artists by being a sculpturally biased and responsive person. I don't think he's aware that that merges exactly with the tactile preference of the population under TV conditions, because television is the most tactile extension of electricity. I think I'll leave at that point. Any questions, phone in and I can continue to explain that. Let's move on to Bykovsky. Now, Bykovsky, again, dealing with the electric environment and tactility of the ground, one aspect of that is the global theater. Now, the global theater arrived when Sputnik went around the planet. When the satellite environment went around the TV and radio and previous electronic environments, plus the previous industrial environments, it turned the global village, which existed since the telegraph and radio conditions, it turned the global village into a global theater. That consequence on the global village itself was to turn it into a ghetto. Now, if you're aware of Bykovsky's work, he uses the ghetto, the slum, the tavern, as a probe. Now, his technique is to wax aphoristically within the ghetto environment. Now, that is the best approach that a male can take to the electric environment, which is essentially right hemisphere and a feminine in its effect. And this goes back to the last words we heard from the Subgenius boys, Stang and Drummond, talking about their desire to bring back the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
That is the last vestige, in a satirical way, of man in the eternal man-woman battle. Women will take over the roles of state and bureaucratic management for the world global village, but man will hijack their surveillance. Now, that is the realm of the Secret Council of Ten. Now, Bykovsky satirizes all those involved in surveillance, because he does his surveillance in a slum tavern. Not slumming like they did in the 19th century and the early 20s. He is purposely putting on the slum ghetto tavern environment as a probe for his researches into the effects of language. In other words, he's a specialist, not like Beefheart in sculpture, but in language, which qualifies him to be attractive and evoke a response to people, because language is, when done properly and in an aphoristic style, is tactile too. Okay, so there's the good points, the services of Bykovsky. Now LaRouche. Now LaRouche is a more difficult phenomenon, because he actually is the most, let's say, intense in striking a public response today. I mean, his time has arrived. To be a successful artist today, you at least have to be discussed in Congress or Parliament. You have to become an issue. This happened to McLuhan, it happened to Joyce, it happened to all the great ones. LaRouche has become a political problem. Now, most people aren't aware of LaRouche's writings as a philosopher and scientist, but LaRouche's role is to bring back visual space, the traditional alphabetic man versus the tactile man of Bykovsky and Beefheart. LaRouche, if you read his writings, has made major discoveries in the scientific categories. Basically, he talks about the continuous manifold and the discrete manifold. The discrete manifold refers to visual space, the seen world, which is a mirror of the continuous manifold, which is the real, he says, unseen world. The real unseen world is a continuous manifold. In other words, LaRouche has made certain discoveries that he's applied to geometry, post-Euclidean discoveries, and post-19th century geometrical discoveries, made by Charles Dodgson, the author of Alice in Wonderland. He was a post-Euclidean mathematician and geometer. He's gone beyond that, basically extending from Bernard Riemann, a great 19th century scientist. Now, the neat thing about LaRouche, because he's visually biased, he is essentially a bureaucrat. But he acts out in the media the battle within factions in the traditional secret governments, and secret factions that run the global theater. Now, he minds that. But with his visual bias, he brings in the hidden assumptions of the tactile environment, of the unseen world, which politically deals with, today, the unseen government, the invisible government. That has surfaced the popular concern over the last 30 years because of the electric invisible environment affecting the bureaucratic power struggle. All right, so he mimes politically the invisible government. He makes it public. He talks about it. And in his science and philosophy and art discussions, he points out the effects of the invisible reality on the visible. So his concepts are responding to the electric environment. Now, LaRouche has not shown any indication, again, like Bikowski and Beefheart, that he's aware of the causes of his discoveries. His causes are the invisible electric tactility, which makes him realize conceptually that there needs to be some revolution in the old traditional visual space, alphabetic-induced concepts. So that is where LaRouche serves a function in bringing back in a very intense probe the values and services of the visual environment while adjusting them to the new electric environment. That's how I would sum up those three players, three people with perfect pitch in their time, and I welcome any assassination attempts on me for talking about this. I welcome any votes that come to me for talking about this, and I welcome an opportunity to further explain this. How do you react to that, Mike?
Well, I think my initial reaction to your word game at the beginning is perhaps does not reflect, you know, your feelings, your ideas on the three men. It fits in very nicely with what the people in the subgenius church were talking about today. The return of we mentioned the patriarchal society, and
the last vestige for the left hemisphere male ego.
Right, and that
not in a bureaucratic form, but in surveillance form.
Well, that's something that didn't come out. That's something that you brought out. That
oh yeah,
clear from the tape.
Well, that's where Stang needs to be corrected.
Yeah.
They're not aware of their desperate need to bring that back. I think they actually think it'll come back in a feudal dark age environment, but they aren't fully aware of Slack, and they don't understand process pattern recognition.
Well, we invite your inquiries this evening. You're going to be around for a little while.
Sure.
Number 595-1655. You were listening to, was this our 12th show?
No, this is our 13th.
13th show. The 13th edition of the Church of the Subgenius. Special guest, J.R. Bob Dobbs.
I'd like to end with one probe. The composite of those three, Bikowski, who were the other two?
Lyndon LaRouche.
And Beefheart.
And Captain Beefheart.
The composite of those three patterns of sculpture, linguistic tactility, and visual space is a fourth person, Frank Zappa. And I will explain how he incorporates the three styles in another biased method.
Perhaps next week?
Maybe.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.